Hello and welcome to the Max Move Podcast. This is Lindsay Behrens. This week is our preview of May Theater episode. We'd love to hear about what you're looking forward to this month, especially if there's something we overlooked. You can find us on Twitter at Maximu, M-A-X-A-M-O-O. Next week, we're doing another episode devoted to live comedy performances. Please be sure to join us for that. Enjoy the show. All right. May preview. A month of new theater. Yay.
Woohoo.
Yay.
We have a new person. Yay.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome, Laura.
Thanks.
Laura, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Laura Mata. I am also known as Lucky on the website thecraptacular.com. And yeah, that's what I do.
We're happy to have you.
Thanks.
And David, welcome.
I am so excited to be here sitting in Nicole's seat. I got a promotion for the week.
Nicole's going to be so sad when she finds out that her seat has been overtaken.
Not overtaken, just I'm keeping it warm.
Keeping it warm.
Both Nicole and Jack are on very exciting business trips this week.
That's true. But you should introduce yourself.
So I am David Levy. I occasionally write for the Craptacular, hopefully more regularly in the weeks to come. And you can also find me all over the web, wherever you can find the name It's the Levy.
Awesome. And I'm Lindsay, the founder of Maximu. So we're going to talk about the shows that we're really looking forward to the most in the next month. And it's an interesting time in theater because all of the various awards deadlines have passed. So you're not getting a lot of new major productions on Broadway or even off-Broadway. But you still have stuff, interesting stuff coming out from the major nonprofit theaters. And it's a particularly interesting time in the indie theater world. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say. David, do you want to start?
Sure. Do you want to start with the thing I'm most excited for?
Yeah.
All right. I am most excited for the show Fly By Night, which is going to be at Playwrights Horizon. And I will admit that one of the reasons I'm most excited for the show is that I am friends with one of the writers. So just put that right out there. But it was conceived by Kim Rosenstock and is written by Kim with Will Connolly and Michael Mitnick. Michael is my friend, lives in my neighborhood. We both went to college, the same college. It's a show that I want to say had a production in Dallas before, if I'm remembering correctly, and got a lot of good out-of-town word of mouth and is now kind of Playwrights. It's got a rock and roll score, and it's a love story, I think a love triangle, about a sandwich maker who finds love with one of two sisters and during the blackout of 1965. And I was already excited because I like what I've heard from the score. Michael did a concert at Joe's Pub in the fall. That was really fun. But then they announced the cast, and it is quite the starry, in the Broadway sense of the word, cast of people like Allison Case, who was a bright light in Hands on a Hard Body, Adam Chandler Barat, who you might remember from Peter and the Star Catcher or Next to Normal, Peter Friedman, who was in Ragtime, Patty Murin, who is my ringtone.
Are you serious?
Yes. She starred in Love's Labor's Lost and in Lysistrata Jones.
What is the ringtone that you have of her?
Oh, so it's from a bootleg of Love's Labor's Lost, and it's her going, she knows this. She knows that I have this ringtone. We've tweeted
so
about
funny.
It.
And when people hear it, do they go, what the hell is that?
Probably. And we can put a link to that if you want to download it on Maximu.
That for is more a information. Great idea.
And Bryce Reines, who was in First Date and Hair. And a bunch of other people too. It's a really exciting cast of people with some really fun music. And Playwrights Horizon has just had a killer season, and this is going to be a great closer for it.
Awesome. I'm super excited about that. Cool. Laura?
So Here Lies Love is coming back at the Public Theater this month, which is going to have its official opening. It's actually already in previews. Love that show so much. David Byrne musical about Imelda Marcos, directed, of course, by Alex Timbers, who we love at the Craptacular and talk about how handsome he is all the time because he is.
And talented.
And also very talented. He has Rocky on Broadway, and he's going to have Here Lies Love, which I think is a better show, open off-Broadway. And I think in terms of an immersive theater experience. Rocky has some amazing immersive elements, but basically all of Here Lies Love is immersive. You are moving around the stage. The stage is moving around you. You are walking up on top of things. You are sort of getting out of the way so that the actors can come sing right next to you. And you are at one point in a full-on dance party, which is really fun.
And it's one of the few shows, for certainly one of the a few musicals that has a cast entirely made up of people of color, which, yes, you know, this city could use a little bit more of.
Yes, for sure. And it just, I also think that too, that cast has this really incredible energy. Jose Lana plays Marcos, and he is like, I don't know, I feel like he's sort of, you know, he's Filipino, he's sort of born to play that role. So love that. So great.
Now, supposedly this is like a bigger and a better version of Here Lies Love. Have you heard?
Really?
Well, just I just heard there's going to be like enhancements. I don't know.
People I know who saw it before and have been to previews.
Is there anything different?
Couldn't point their fingers at anything in particular okay. that was different.
There is a bar, I heard. Is that true?
Oh.
I heard that as well.
That makes everything better.
Yeah.
that's an enhancement.
Enhancement, and that's all you need.
No, that's the best enhancement.
And there's mandatory coat check.
Oh, well, that's a good idea, actually, so that you're not like getting your like scarf tangled in around someone's hair or something while you're there.
But it's in the same space that it was in before, yep. although now it is not a public theater production. It is a commercial production housed at the Public Theater that the public gets some kind of a cut of, also as the originating producer,
yeah.
which is a little bit inside baseball. But yeah. If people are like, I don't understand why I have to pay over $100.
That's why.
Yeah. And also, let me tell you, it is, if you are the kind of person who can afford to pay $100 plus to see a show, this is a show that is totally worth your $100+.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is far greater value for your money than you are going to get, I would venture, at any $100 Broadway ticket.
I think that's completely
true. I think this completely beats all of them on value.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, for me, this was like, when we first saw it, best show of the year. I mean, sort of hands down, it has this, there is this kind of comedic element amidst all of these very tragic elements that are, and also, like I said, it's a dance party. It's also a fun show that is, that also makes you think about a political condition that you maybe have never thought of before. And a lot of spectacle and really fun. And also there was actually, I mean, this production comes on the heels of the rumor that it was going to transfer to Broadway.
Right.
And everybody was sort of scratching their heads about how that would happen and what space it would go into and how would they do it. And I wonder if the answer is there was no space on Broadway that could really accommodate a show of this complexity and has this many people moving around and, you know, actors, audience, open space, moving set pieces.
Well, and not to go too far down that rabbit hole that you just raised, but I think that if you put this show in a really big space, you're going to lose a lot of the experiential
yeah.
value that it gives its audience. And I think actually that's true of almost every show that
right.
you put it in a bigger
yeah.
theater. It's not as interesting. It's not as intimate. It's not as dynamic. It's not as personal. And so I don't know if they made the decision to keep it in this smaller theater for artistic reasons, but there are certainly artistic merit to keeping it in this small space. And so you're going to have to pay more for a ticket probably because it's in a small space and it's for a smaller audience every night, but they're still paying the same number of actors and crew.
Right.
So this is at the top of my list for anybody who is coming to town. If you have out of town visitors, send them to the show. And then if they want to see other shows, send them to a Broadway show. But see this show first.
And make them get a drink at the bar.
Yeah.
But also, it's worth adding that if you're listening to this, you're like, oh, that sounds really awesome, but I don't know that I can stand for 90 minutes and dancing sounds miserable to me. There are a limited number of stationary seats that are in a balcony overlooking the show. I have friends who sat in those seats and said that they felt like they did see the show and got the experience. So, you know, there are only a few of them, so you have to book really in advance to get them, but don't let the dancing thing shoo you away from this if that's like really not your
yeah thing. If you're thinking it's like a workout, like you don't have to
right
you
right.
don't
otherwise,
have to do that
otherwise not that taxing. And I will
no.
say, as a person who often finds immersive experiences unpleasant because I don't actually enjoy the interactive nature of breaking the fourth wall very often, this show does it in a way that adds to the experience, is not overly oppressive. And so I would hope that that element actually wouldn't deter anyone from seeing the show were they intimidated by it, because it's actually not overwhelming. So, okay. Good call. Good call on that one. Okay. So I want to mention a show from the Flux Theater Ensemble, which is one of the indie theater companies in New York City that I follow religiously. Every show they do, I go to. They were founded by a couple of artists, one of whom is their resident playwright, Gus Schulenburg. And the new play they have coming up is called Jane the Plain, and it is by Gus. And I don't think... I just go see everything they do. So actually, like, the content of the show isn't that important to me. But I do know that it's described as a comic fairy tale set in a high school, and that this is a world premiere, and that it's, you know, it's won some playwriting awards, and Gus has got the, you know, New York City credentials of being a LARC Playwrights Workshop Fellow and things like that. I just think that if you are interested in supporting independent theater in New York City, the way to do it is to find a company that you really love, or an artist or two, be they a playwright or a director or a couple of actors, and just go see everything they do. And it's not all going to be perfect, but it's a way to find a path through literally hundreds of productions that happen every week. And so Gus and Flux is on that list for me, and they have a show coming up later in May at the 4th Street Theater. It's called Jane the Plain, and I'm looking forward to checking it out.
Nice. So a company that is becoming like that for me, although they're a little bit higher profile, is the New York Theater Workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I first, probably like most people my age, I first heard about them because they're the place where Rent started.
Right.
And then when I was in college, I went to see just whatever happened to be playing there when I was here on spring break. And it was like this, it was a British like dark comedy called Shopping and Fucking, which was like, you know, the polar opposite of what Rent was. It was like very dark and involved like anal sex with a knife. Like it was.
That sounds awesome.
My goodness.
But it was, that was like my
family friendly here, David.
I know.
We have never.
I know that.
First
was,
of all, in my family.
A little joke. That was a little joke.
In my family, that is totally appropriate.
Well, my Mormon mother listens to this podcast, so keep it clean.
You know,
I'm joking. She also does listen, but she doesn't care that we swear.
They are also the place that Peter and the Starcatcher came from.
Yep, and once.
And they have a show up now, which actually I didn't realize until I was sitting in the theater, was a last minute substitution on their schedule that they were originally supposed to have some Cinderella Cendrillon
piece,
which has now been postponed to a future season. Unclear if that's next season or further in the future.
Okay.
And instead, they imported Red Eye to Havre de Grace, which is a show that ran in Philadelphia in 2012 and got a very warm review in the Times. Ran in Boston earlier this year. And it is an experimental take on the last days of Edgar Allan Poe's life. It's so interesting because it draws together a bunch of things that I've been really interested in lately, and I think I've talked about here. One is that it puts a lot of poetry on stage. So a lot of the text is Poe's poems. But it's not just like, oh, they're going to read The Raven and then there's going to be a raven on stage and it's, you know, some guy, you know, like,
God, I hope not.
No, but they
absolutely literal theater by Edgar Allan Poe.
But instead they recontextualize his poems in really interesting ways. And some of them are set to music, by the Willem brothers, who are also in the show. And a lot of, the other text is found text from his letters or, accounts from other people who knew him at the time. Which is another thing that I've been really interested in lately is found theater texts. And there's some movement and some interpretive dance. And like some of the promotional materials call this a musical. It is not a musical. It is a play with music. If you come in expecting like an opening number and, you know, an I Want song, you're going to be sorely
confused. A dancing Edgar Allan Poe. It's not going to happen.
And also, you know, I went with a friend of mine who likes theater but doesn't go a lot and was visiting from out of town. It was just like, yeah, I'll go to whatever you want. And it was great because the show starts, and I'm not going to give it away, but it starts with a little like coup de theater. And she totally like bought into it and like was even whispering to me while it was going on, like making it clear that it wasn't clear to her that this was part of the play. Uh-huh. And like, oh, I love it when theater does that successfully. And, you know, this show is not, it's a little confusing in the storytelling. I don't think you necessarily will be able to walk away and say, like, this is clearly what that moment meant and that moment meant. But as sort of like a poetic fever dream, I thought it was really interesting, and I'm really glad I saw it. And that opens this week, I think.
Cool. Laura.
So I actually was reading about this show that I initially sort of looked at. It's called The Anthem, and it's a musical. And it's a rock musical based on the Ayn Rand novel. And it stars Jason Gotye and Remy Zakin, which actually were the two things that sort of caught my attention about it. We love Jason Gotye. He was in
Bring It On.
He was in Bring It On, and he's adorable and has a very heart-throbby air about him, which, of course, is very interesting. And Remy Zakin, who is in Spring Awakening, who I remember the first time I saw her in Spring Awakening, she was like this tiny, tiny girl with this giant voice. And it's cool to see her cast in something. But the description of this I thought was like pretty fascinating. The new musical, and I'm reading from the article that was on Playbill. The new musical, which will feature an expansive aerial and circus environment, is described as such: Hunger Games meets Ayn Rand in a far off future, several centuries after the early 1980s, in a social media gone mad world where individuality is illegal. So of course I want to see that show. I mean,
because it sounds awful to me.
To me, that's something that could be horribly right or horribly wrong, and that's sort of like the best theater for me.
Although I will say that Jason Gotye was the closing matinee Spider-Man.
He was.
The last month or two of Spider-Man Turn Off the Dog. So if you missed that and you're like, oh, I wish I got to see Jason Gotye doing aerial stuff.
I know.
Now's your chance.
You have another chance. Although I don't know that he will be doing the actual aerial stuff, although he may. Right. I don't know. But yeah, I thought that sounded sort of like amazingly fascinating. So
where's that at?
It's going to be at the, I will tell you right now. It's at the Lindgren Redgrave Theater.
Oh, okay, yeah.
On Bleecker, which is like right up the block from my apartment. So I always like walk by it and I'm like, okay, what's happening over there? So fascinated. No idea if it will be good or not.
We're going to need a report back on that one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you will get a report back. Absolutely. I mean, that sort of seems like it could be a really great candidate for an absolutely craptacular musical, which is like...
Yeah.
Your bread and butter.
Which is, well, it's sort of like the great joy and horror of my theater experience all at once. So I'm going to be there.
Cool. Okay. So I wanted to talk about something that's not like, I guess, pure theater.
Is it impure theater?
No, I don't know what, I don't even know. I feel like somebody's going to send some kind of nasty tweet now being like, how dare you say blah, 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 it's not theater, whatever. Anyway, backstory, we had our podcast on Cabaret with you and Adam. David, sorry, I'm pointing to David and saying you. David and Adam. And it was a very interesting conversation that really got me interested more in that style of performance. And then last week I went to Joe's Pub and I saw this woman who performs under the stage name Rodimus Prime, which is a play on Optimus Prime. And
from the Transformers.
Yes. Oh, thank you for clarifying. I just thought that would go without saying, but you're right.
Orson Welles' last great role.
And basically, like, she is a woman in her 40s, and she is a playwright. She's, I think, probably, if you know of her, she's a playwright, and she's written screenplays and
pilots. Is this pilots. The character, or is she the performer, or both?
Oh, gosh, you're going to make me really parse this here. So... her stage name is Rodimus Prime. She doesn't write plays under that name. Okay. That's what you're asking, right?
Yes. Yeah. But that would be amazing if she did.
That would also be amazing. And maybe there's a future there. But she's a hip hop artist. And basically, like,
she's not called Hip Optimus Prime.
No, because her name is Rada. That's like her real name. Rodimus Prime. So she got on stage and she was like, you know, who speaks for overweight, undersexed, like black women in their 40s in hip hop? And she's like, I do.
And everyone I follow on Tumblr.
And she was just amazing. I mean, it was such an awesome performance. And I was like, you know, they said like performances in Joe's Pub and 54 Below venues were interesting. And this is no doubt blown me away. And I just feel like I need to really focus my energy on seeing more stuff like that, because I'm a little, to be honest, a little burnt out on the like straight up theater.
And this is a good time of year for that, because as the theater seasons are all kind of winding up, cabaret is year round.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Lindsay and I actually have been emailing back and forth over the last couple of weeks trying to plan out our adventurous Joe's Pub schedule.
Yes. So I wanted to mention one particular performance at Joe's Pub that's coming up, because there's a series of them. And so there's a lot of opportunities, and that's Reverend Billy.
Yes.
And
I say yes because I want to see him.
Have you ever
seen him
perform? So Reverend Billy is a performance artist who leads a choir called the Stop Shopping Choir. And they are pretty well known because they, the past year, did a whole bunch of performance slash civil disobedience actions at Chase Banks. And actually, he's been arrested multiple times for doing this kind of political action theater performance. But this last time was actually very serious, and he was charged with a lot of things that could have landed him in jail for an extended period of time. And there is an episode of the Public Theaters podcast called Public Forum. The interview is with Reverend Billy, and he talks a lot about that situation. It was very interesting.
Is he a real reverend?
I don't know the answer to that question. Okay. Yeah.
I have to say, I got interested in him because he was a character in Mike Daisy's All the Faces of the Moon.
Oh, interesting.
And that was the first time I'd heard of him, and I didn't realize that he was a real guy until like halfway through All the Faces, when I started like looking into some of the names that came up and realized that it was this bigger mosaic of the New York landscape.
What are his shows like? Can you give like a
sense? I think it's like a church revival.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I think it's pretty intense,
but like
actually.
Anti-consumerist, anti-capitalist church revival.
And okay. So they are doing a series of performances like every Sunday at 2 p.m., basically starting.
Like gospel brunch?
Awesome.
That would be great. Starting next week through late into June, actually. And the sort of theme, they've really gotten into like climate change issues. And so it's called the Honey Bee Luya Show, like Hallelujah Honey Bee Luya Show.
And because all of the honeybees
are dying.
Right.
And so this is all about like big agriculture. And I know that in the past, like they've done performances at Joe's Pub and then like led the audience on like a political activity afterwards.
Wow.
On the way out, like stop at the Chase Bank at the on that corner by the Public.
Oh God.
And like sing in the vestibule and like, you know, raise a ruckus. This is like in a weird way, like a melding of my like political activism past, but also my fear of interactive theater.
I was going to say, this sounds very interactive. Never mind immersive.
Yeah, it's like my sweet spot for joy and pain together. Anyway,
your kink is okay.
Exactly. I mean, the tickets are like $15. I definitely, definitely want to see it.
Although, is there a food and drink menu?
I'm sure there is.
Right, because no, I was at 54 Below
right
the other
to raise
night.
That.
With our friend Sarah Ellis, and we were talking about, oh, like even when we get a really great deal here, then we remember like not only is there a food and drink minimum, but we often surpass that one because the food and the drinks are delicious. And
yeah.
So like, you know, it's awesome that you can get into these places often for not very much, but getting out of them.
Yes.
An affordable ticket is not really an affordable ticket
right.
at the end of the night.
Yes. Good point.
So says your bill.
Yeah.
Good. All right, cool.
Oh, it's funny. You had said something about a fairy tale a while ago, and I was like, oh, that's a good segue into the thing I'm going to talk about. But that was so long ago, the segue is no longer valid, but I'm trying to make it happen
anyway.
Speaking of fairy tales, and speaking of theater companies that I've begun following more closely, the Rattlestick has a show coming up called The Fable. A Fable.
Oh, I'm so glad you're raising this.
Oh, yes?
I would never have expected this out of you, David.
Oh, well, here's why it caught my eye, is that... although it is written by David Van Asselt.
Yep.
It has music by Liz Suedos, who is someone who I am fascinated by. She is a songwriter, playwright who's been around since the 70s, whose work has really ranged from like very experimental off-Broadway to very commercial on-Broadway. She wrote Doonesbury, the musical, with Gary Trudeau in the 80s.
Wow.
But she also wrote Runaways. And she also has a whole series of Jewish... informed work like Bible Women and Esther, and her stuff is very polarizing, partially because it's very political. Like Runaways was created in partnership with a bunch of actual runaway teens and musicalized their stories and you know, it's very 70s. So especially like now looking back at it, you're like, oh my God. But she is one of these people who just like she has stuck to her guns and like her art is her art. And I'm so interested in seeing what she does. And A Fable is, I will admit, like having read up about it, I still don't really know what it is, except that it's loosely themed around fairy tales. The description talks about how it explores the way in which our choices can lead us down different paths, which makes it sound like If Then, although hopefully better. I say without having seen If Then. but again, like I've seen shows with the Rattlestick that I've loved. I've seen shows with the Rattlestick that have not been for me, but I haven't seen anything there that I've regretted seeing. Yeah. Because they do really strong productions and with really talented artists. So that combination of things put that on my radar.
Yeah. Okay. I want to jump the queue here. Sorry, Laura. But this is also on my list, but for totally different reasons. And I love that we came to this from such different directions. So the playwright is actually the artistic director and founder of Rattlestick.
Oh.
And the director is Daniel Talbot, who's the literary manager at Rattlestick, who is an artist that I follow in New York City and is a little like hub of independent theater and produces really raw, interesting stuff with his theater company, Rising Phoenix Rep. And this is a joint production between Rattlestick and Rising Phoenix. So I'm also very excited about this and super excited to hear that there's an interesting musical element. I think that's fantastic.
Nice. It's worth mentioning that this is at the Cherry Lane Theater. Yes. Which is not their usual space.
Right, right. They produce show. Rattlestick right. produces at both theaters. Awesome. Cool. All right, Laura.
Well, this is completely different. So there's actually, there's a new Forbidden Broadway actually coming.
Not completely different. That also has music.
That's true. It also has music. But yeah, so this one I think is going to be really fun. Pippin, Kinky Boots, Les Mis, Matilda, joining favorites from last year, including Wicked and the Book of Mormon. So I think it's always fun to make fun of all of those things. So.
And Forbidden Broadway is in a new space now, right?
It is at the Davenport Theater.
Which is right on Union Square, I think.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No? Then it's not at the Davenport Theater because the Davenport Theater is on 45th Street.
Then that's right. It might be at the Davenport. Okay. That is me being confused about where the Davenport Theater is, not being confused about where
it's on 45th Street, yeah.
It's on 45th Street, yay. Yeah.
Did you see the last one?
I thought it was great. Yeah. And Forbidden Broadway, you know, like I was saying to Laura before that I've been going to Forbidden Broadway since I was a little kid because I have that kind of family. There are years when it's like amazing. There are years when it's like, and last year I thought was one of their strongest.
Yeah.
And this year, there's, I think, a really ripe crop of things yeah. to make fun of.
It's always easy and fun to make fun of Les Mis.
Right.
Like if you can't find something to make fun of in Les Mis, sort of like, why are we doing this? Yeah. You know? So, and I actually thought that I always feel this way about Forbidden Broadway is that I feel like some of the numbers are really, really amazing and I laugh my face off. And then there are others that I'm just kind of like, all right, well, I guess we'll wait and see if the next one is funny.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like, and I feel like that's always kind of the way it goes, but always really fun to sort of see what they're going to do, you know.
And the neat thing about Forbidden Broadway is this has actually been in previews for like 2 or 3 months while they workshop their material.
Yeah.
So that by the time they officially open, which is next week, I think.
Yeah.
They've really kind of figured out like what is the right
what's working
and a lot of shows, musical and otherwise, could benefit from that kind of process.
Yeah, but I it's so funny because I love that franchise has just been around for like a million bazillion 80s. Years.
I mean, their first show opened to make fun of Merrily We Roll Along.
Yeah. Like, I mean, do you remember when they used to make cast recordings of them? Like,
I mean, they still do.
Last do they year, still do? Oh, well, all right. Never mind. They recording. Still do.
There's like 10 volumes or so.
I mean, that's...
And a hardcover book with lots of lyrics and pictures.
That's pretty amazing. And I cannot say that I would ever buy a Forbidden Broadway hardcover book.
You can borrow mine.
Okay, I will, Dave. thank you very much. I appreciate that. But there, it just seems like there's a lot of things, like I said, that would be fun to make fun of right now. So excited to see that.
It's a new show every year.
It's a new show, but there are always... element much like Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind uh-huh. at the Neo Futurist.
Yeah.
You know, every show has some elements that carry over from the past. I mean, their Les Mis parody this year has some new things in it.
Have you seen it?
No, oh, but okay. I have
heard about it. Got it.
certainly parts of their Les Mis parody like aren't straight from 1987.
Right.
And like they've had an Annie parody. They've had two different Annie parodies that have like traded off that are like always part of the show.
Yeah.
But lots of it is new. I would say probably 75 to 80% of the show is new.
I'm going to admit, I've actually never been to it.
Well, you have to go. We can find it.
Is it really good?
Yeah, you have to go. It's fun. It's fun.
And the performers, this is worth saying, performers are so talented in that they have, you know, parody is hard.
Yeah.
And they're doing a very specific kind of parody where sometimes they're parodying performers and sometimes they're parodying sort of like the platonic idea of what a show is.
Right.
Like when they're doing The Lion King, they're not parodying any particular performance in The Lion King. They're parodying like, you know, 20 years worth of ideas of what The Lion King is supposed to be like. And they just knock it out of the park.
And the thing that I think is really fun, too, is that they're not afraid to do the kind of uber inside joke. Right. Like, they sort of go for it. They're like, all right, well, we figure if you're coming to see this show, you love theater and have probably seen all the shows that we're making fun of anyway.
And it's still funny even if you don't get all of them.
Yeah, exactly. It was that it just sort of plays as silly and, you know. I love that show. I think it's fun.
And a number of their cast members have gone on to be in the shows that they then parody. You know, Jason Alexander was one of their early cast members. I learned from reading their hardcover book.
Oh, well.
or like Brian Batt, who you guys might know from. He was on Mad Men, right? And he was also in a number of Broadway musicals, including Seussical and Lacage. And a lot of people in their shows have gone on. Dee Hody to have, you know, notable Broadway and television careers.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So I'll mention one more. Actually, we talked about last month also, The Few by Samuel D. Hunter at Rattlestick. Apparently that's the theater of the day. but I actually saw it, so I can give an update to our earlier enthusiasm for the show. So we talked a lot on the last episode, or not the last episode, but the last time we talked about this, Samuel D. Hunter is a well-known playwright who explores really deep emotional issues. His play, The Whale, was about a man who suffered from all kinds of problems, including depression, but was just sort of aiming to kill himself by eating himself to death. It was morbidly obese. The Few is no more upbeat. It's also a very, it tackles characters who are struggling, and essentially it takes place at a newspaper in 1999. And the central character is a man who founded this newspaper and then just left one day. And the play starts 4 years later when he returns. And his co-founder of the newspaper and also former girlfriend has stayed behind and run the newspaper in his absence. And so obviously there's a lot of tension and conflict there. And then there's a third younger character who has been around since the main guy left and now serves to just kind of annoy everyone. I mean, I feel like I'm being a little mean to that character, but he's really annoying. But that's sort
is
of
there
his,
something to do
that's
with truckers
his role.
In the show too?
Yeah. The newspaper is about long haul truckers. Every time I've seen a play by this playwright, I'm always like, oh my gosh, I think he wrote that just for me. He really spoke to
a thing about truckers.
It really spoke to a thing I'm going through right now. No, but I have a newspaper or a 2014 version of a newspaper. And I suspect actually that everybody walks out of the theater feeling the same way. It just, he really creates very honest and natural characters who you watch go through real emotional challenges and not always come up with the right answers. And I just think that there's something really devastating, but also really beautiful about a playwright daring to put that kind of truth on stage. Not everything worked in this play, but I thought it was a really good experience, except that two rows in front of me were some teenagers who tittered and talked and messed around with their baseball hats for the entire show. But they were outside of my reach. And so I couldn't get to them. They were a whole row removed from me.
See, senior citizens, we hate everyone equally.
I know.
I could not believe it. They were so rude. So, and it
Who
got,
wears a baseball hat to the theater? Rule number one.
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, if they had just worn it, that would have been less of a problem.
Like, that would have been fine.
Than the, like, popping it up on top of his head repeatedly throughout the performance.
How do kids That's like not that okay. end up at like tiny off Broadway
shows? I don't
know.
It's a really good question because the Rousics is a small theater, so I think there were some parents there who made a very impotent effort to control them. Let's just say the people who were sitting directly behind them were clearly agitated, but they did nothing to, like, address the situation.
Oh, you gotta say something.
Oh, you gotta say something.
You gotta
agree,
say something.
Right?
Oh, I call the ushers over for, like, anything. I'm like, excuse me, that person's annoying. Make them
oh,
not be
so
annoying.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've, like, said things to people.
Oh, I say things to people all the
death
time.
Death glares, but I have called the ushers.
I feel like...
How do you do that, like...
Without creating a greater problem.
Yeah, especially if you're not on the aisle.
Oh, see, I have been sort of at a place where I was accessible to the ushers. So I've been able to be like, excuse me.
Yeah. So I was unable to address this situation during the play.
Was there an intermission?
No, it's 90 minutes.
See,
no intermission.
Because I've done it at intermission,
oh,
too.
Oh, I would have for sure said something had there been an intermission. So the play ends. Everybody stands up. They're putting on their coats. And the ringleader of the bad behavior stands up, turns 90 degrees. So he's kind of like almost facing me now. And just shouts, move! and I was like, oh no, this has gone on for long.
Listen,
time.
You whippersnapper.
No. I took my playbill in hand, leaned forward over two rows.
No, you didn't.
Hit it on the back of the chair with my other hand, snapped my fingers, and I said, you were extremely rude throughout that entire performance.
Oh no.
Oh, wait, can I tell a story about this?
Wait, but I want to know what what he said.
Stunned. He looked like someone had punched him in the face.
So he had, like, no idea.
He just was stunned. And then a guy who was sitting, like, a couple people over from him on his same row took his playbill and hit him. And I didn't hear what he said, but I think he probably said, like, yeah, you were really rude.
Violence at the theater.
I didn't hit him. I did not touch
I wish
the
you
person.
Had.
There
I wish you
no
had.
There was no assault. Although I have touched people in the theater before. I've, like, put my finger on them and been like, put
you
your
poke.
Phone away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a poker.
Mm. So I'm a subscriber to Encores, as listeners to this podcast know.
Oh.
And during the first show of the season, the women who were sitting at the end of our aisle talked through the whole show. And the friend with whom I attend Encores, on our way out of the aisle, turned and said something a little bit rude to them. About, like, something along the lines of, like, geez, do you ever shut up? And, like, but we're on our way out of the theater and, like, didn't think about the fact that we're subscribers and, like, maybe they are too and they'd be sitting next to us again.
Oh, God.
So during the intermission to Most Happy Fella, the woman leans over to us and is like, do you come to these shows regularly?
Oh, no.
And, like, I'd totally forgotten about this and she was well-behaved during Most Happy Fella. And
she liked that one.
And I was like, yeah, we're, you know, we're subscribers, so we're usually here Saturday matinee at these seats. And she's like, well... Someone at the last one was silver doing. She like started stirring shit up. So I was like, well, it wasn't me. I like leaned back and like let the two of them have the most awkward conversation I've ever witnessed. And on the one hand, it was super uncomfortable for us. On the other hand, she was very well behaved in the show. So like totally worth it.
Maybe you taught her a lesson.
Maybe. However, for Irma LaDuce, which is their upcoming show next week, we are going at a different performance than our usual subscriber moment.
Just by coincidence? Or
yeah,
because you don't want to cast them
specifically to avoid them?
No, because we have
I'm like, that's really taking that very far.
You're like, we've had enough. This conflict is now...
Never want to see those people again.
God, I mean, look, at 54 Below on Friday, I was there for Melissa Errico, and there was a table of two senior citizens who were so loud, and especially like
because they can't
quiet
hear
moments of the song.
That's
right.
Why they can't hear.
Right. I don't think he had any sense of the fact that he was screaming when she was singing "Metal Lark." Like he was like, "What is this about the bird?" And like, oh, it was so uncomfortable,
completely deaf.
Yeah,
yeah. But, I mean, you know. Bad theater behavior is kind of like, yeah. I mean, we could talk an
forever.
Entire podcast.
We
about
do.
This.
Oh, we
do. I think
have you ever
raised.
Been? Have you ever been on the other side of it, where someone has said something to you? Because that has happened to me before.
And yes,
it's the most awesome circumstance ever. And I know that sounds really braggy, but it's true. Because we went to see the Love Never Dies movie in the movie theater.
Oh, I've heard this
story. And We laughed through maybe 75 to 80% of the entire film. Because if you're not laughing at that,
you're not getting it.
Yeah. And this guy came up to us afterwards and like, this is in the operatic style. Like we had misunderstood something about what we were seeing.
Please explain Andrew Lloyd Webber to me.
I know. And I did feel kind of bad because I was like, I am that person that annoys me so much at other shows, but whatever. It was in a movie theater in Times Square.
When I was a teenager, I saw Hair on tour at the Colonial Theater in Boston with my friend, and we went in our love beads and our tie-dyes, and we're like bobbing in our seats, dancing to the music. And,
wow.
Totally unaware of the fact that if we're dancing in our seats, it's totally distracting the people behind us. And thankfully, the people behind us were a very kind middle-aged couple who taps on our shoulder, we get that you're having a really good time, but it's hard for us to see when you do that. In the best possible way. And we're like, oh, we're so sorry. And we calm down and enjoy the rest of the show. And I learned a lesson.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You don't wear beads to the theater anymore.
I don't. I wore those love beads for a year and a half after that show.
Oh,
I was
that's
so
awesome.
Into it. Luther Creek played Claude.
Oh, man. Luther Creek.
Speaking of dressing up to go to the theater, last night I saw Hedwig.
Oh.
Have you guys seen it?
No, but I'm going. I'm going. So excited. I've seen it before, but not this, not this production.
Right. I saw the original.
Yeah.
Now, do you know, I know you haven't seen the current one, but was the original in the same style that it was basically a concert where Hedwig tells you the story?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if that was a new thing.
But the part that's different in this one is that it's site specific. So So in the original one, it was at the Jane Street Theater, which is in the Meatpacking District. And it is a gross hotel ballroom.
It was it was a theater under a flop house,
right?
Basically. There's that story of them wheeling dead bodies out
where they brought the Titanic survivors too.
But that's the last time that was a functional working hotel. Right. Now it's just a gross, although I don't know who, it's probably multi-million dollar condos
now. It's a fancy hotel. The Jane Hotel.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh yes, you're absolutely right. You're right. It's a nice hotel now.
Yeah.
They've gutted the whole thing.
But anyway, so then the backstory was that Tommy Gnosis was performing at the Meadowlands across the river, and so every time he opened the back door, that's what you were hearing.
Okay.
So in the new version, Tommy Gnosis is performing in Times Square,
right,
which is why Hedwig is at a Broadway house.
Although, it's right out the door.
Right, but also that, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but the new one, they had to concoct a reason why Hedwig could get a Broadway house, which I have to say, the reason is very clever, but it was totally spoiled all over the internet, and I'm a little sad about that. So maybe I won't talk about what that reason is.
I haven't heard it yet. I've been avoiding.
I saw the show last night, and I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh. So about that, they're on the set of something that closed quickly.
Yeah, yes. And, oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, okay.
They made up a fake playbill for it, which was then posted all over the internet.
Spoiling the film. Okay, now I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So all that is new for this
production. There's no shortage of information on this show, so I don't want to give it a full report or anything, but I just want to say Lena Hall is a fucking awesome drag king. We need way more drag kings on Broadway.
Is she Yitzhak?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my god, she is so fucking hot in this show.
And that role is amazing.
I was just obsessed with her. I mean, I don't know, quite honestly, NPH was awesome, and kudos for the role and the performance, and he's working his ass off up there, but I was give that lady a show. I want to see that show. That's way more to my taste, obviously, but I just thought she was amazing.
I'm glad to hear that, because people haven't had a lot to say about her, and it's a little bit of a thankless role.
Well, that's because you have,
you have Neil Patrick Harris.
Make massive generalizations. I was at the 10 p.m. show, so you have tons of gay men and maybe some straight couples. What you don't have is a lot of queer women in the room who are really going to appreciate that performance. And she just fucking owns it. It was just, I was so obsessed with that character. I watched her as much as I could throughout the entire performance. Could you, Hedwig, move away from her?
And I feel Yitzhak is the secret hero of
sure.
that show.
Totally.
That is the sort of secondary storyline that is there. But Hedwig is so outsized that it's you have to watch for that storyline and make yourself aware of it. Otherwise, you're just going to get so caught up in this.
Yeah. I just thought she owned both genders and did an amazing job. And I loved her performance.
And it's never explicitly spelled out whether it is a man playing a woman or it is just supposed to be a man.
Right.
Yeah.
which I think is like the intrigue of that whole part of the show.
Right. And like when I saw it originally, Miriam Shore was in the part. And oh, yeah. I had no
idea. She's
amazing. I didn't know until I looked at the playbill after the show that that was a woman playing that part.
Yeah.
Like, and I didn't know who she was. And so you know, she's gone on to have bigger roles since. And now that I've seen her.
She's in the movie.
Yes.
Yeah, she's Yitzhak in the movie.
Yeah. But you know, she was on Good Christian Bitches. I don't know if you remember that TV show. Like playing a very girly girl part. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that's that same actress.
Wow.
Do we have time for more
stuff? Oh, if you have more, yeah.
Yeah, I've got two more. One, one which bears a lot in common with The Few, and that is also a story of someone who disappears and then comes back years later, and it is 17 Orchard Point, which is a two-hander with two women.
Oh my God, I thought you were going to say Annapurna. There's so many plays with this exact same storyline going on right now. So what is this one you're talking about?
So 17 Orchard Point, which I am fascinated by because it was written by a woman. It was co-written by a man and a woman, directed by a woman, and stars two women. So again, like, yay, the ladies, not enough female-driven theater in the city. And it stars Michelle Pak, who I am so in love with.
Love.
Who, if you don't know her, I think she was either won or nominated for Tony for The Hollywood Arms. And she was in the original cast of the production of Cabaret that is now revived at the Roundabout. And she was in Seussical. And she's just
great. She was in Merrily.
Oh, yeah. She was in the York production.
She was
of
Gussie
Rally
in, yeah.
She married Merrily. John Dossett.
Yeah, she's one half of a Broadway power couple.
Yeah, and she's just tremendous. And she co-stars with the co-writer, Stephanie DiMaggio. It is at Theater Row at the Beckett Theater, and it's a story. So it's a mother like disappears for 10 years, comes back to find that her daughter has sort of you know, obviously moved on with her life, and what happens with that. So you know, I don't know a whole lot about it except that I saw Michelle Pak's name and then saw that it was like all these other women doing it. I was like, oh, that's something that I want to see.
Where's that at?
It's at Theater Row at the Beckett Theater.
Hmm. Well, since I mentioned Annapurna, it's already open, but I just want to say it's the Char White play with Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally, and the plot. It's also at Theater Row. It's by the new, or it's being, it was in LA, had a good run there, then the new group brought it here, so this is its New York premiere. And it's about a couple who divorced, and then 20 years later, the woman shows up, the man is now living in like a trailer in the forest, and the woman who disappeared 20 years earlier returns. And why did she leave the first time? Why did she come back? Who knows?
And what is in the air right now that these stories of like people who disappear and come back is like a
know.
thing?
I know,
so
it's really
bizarre.
Random. It makes for a great See This Not That.
Yeah. The only other thing on my list, which I am holding tickets to already, which is exciting, is City of Conversation, which is at Lincoln Center's Mitzi Newhouse, which is the Jem Maxwell show. And from what I hear, she is giving a tour de force performance. And it was written by Anthony Giardina and directed by Doug Hughes, and is about a socialite in Washington, D.C. It takes place over a number of years, starting in the Carter administration to now. Also is about an intergenerational female relationship between her and her, I think, daughter-in-law, where they have different politics. That's really all I know about it, except that Jem Maxwell is someone who, again, I would see almost anything she does, and I've been hearing great things about her performance. And the new house is a great space. It's at Lincoln Center, but it's a really intimate house, so that's a lot of fun.
Great place to see theater. Yeah. I love just like going, seeing anything in that space. It's like amazing. Love.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Anybody have anything else to add?
I'm going to add one last quick thing because it's technically in June, but Much Ado About Nothing, Shakespeare in the Park, it's the first Shakespeare in the Park production this year. Lily Rabe, who is so beautiful and amazing, and the also beautiful and amazing Hamish Linklater, who I have a massive crush on. So, of course, it's short. It's only a couple of performances.
It runs for a couple of weeks, right?
It's
like the regular thing.
Yeah.
Why did I think it didn't?
Because it's one of those shows that's like 3 weeks of previews and then like a week of real performances.
Right, exactly. So it's like it goes on longer than it seems like it does.
And for listeners, if you've never seen Shakespeare in the Park, it is easier to get tickets before the official opening and before the reviews.
Sure. Absolutely. So, absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is one that, like, you know, it's not like, you know, John Lithgow is going to be in Lear later in this. Although I don't think people are going to be waiting in the park at 4 a.m. for, you know, John Lithgow.
Or for, like, King the 12th production of Lear in New York.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus. But, you know, usually it's the sort of, you know, if there are big stars in the production, then people sleep outside the park. But, I mean, you know, Hamish Linklater, I don't think has people sleeping outside Central Park yet.
Although the rest of this cast is also great. But it's, Brian Stokes Mitchell is in it.
Yes, and, yes.
The cute one.
The guy, Steele Burkhardt, with the hair. Yeah. We're big fans of Steele, of I was going to say something about how he has long hair, but he actually doesn't have long hair anymore. Steele Burkhardt, who's, like, really handsome, and we love him.
Hamish Linklater is never better than when he's in Shakespeare in the Park.
Yeah.
It's so true. Comedy of Errors.
It's so true.
He was great in Comedy of Errors. He was great in the earlier one that he did that's now escaping me.
Anyway. He was in Merchant of Venice in the park.
The Pacino one?
He was in the earlier one.
I mean,
that Audrey McDonald was in.
12th Night?
He was in 12th
Night.
Oh,
yeah, the 12th Night, which
that
is like
where
the
I
greatest.
I saw him, yeah. And he was so fantastic in that role.
I first saw him in The New Adventures of Old Christine.
Well, I mean, where I first saw him in Shakespeare in the Park. Where he should just perform there exclusively.
He should be,
opinion.
Yes, exactly. Every Shakespeare in the Park should have Hamish Linklater in it.
Although I also think we should also let other people have chances to be in Shakespeare in the Park. I am of two minds on this issue. I've contradicted myself on this very specific issue before. Yes, on this podcast, in fact, I'm pretty sure I've contradicted myself. So
you're allowed.
That's okay. All right. Awesome. This was so much fun.
Yeah, this
thank
was great.
Thank you for joining.
Sure. Thank you for having me. This is really fun.
Come back. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Maximu podcast. You can find us all on Twitter. Maximu is at MAXAMOO. David is at It's DeLevy. That's ITSDLEVY. Laura is at The Craptacular. TheCraptacular. And I'm at Lindsay Behrens, LindsayBarenz. Please join us next week for our episode all about live comedy performances. We'll see you then.